Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me this evening is my good friend and very perplexed looking Chad Metz.
Why are we doing I Dream of Jeannie?
Because, you know, always good to pop out the classics every now and then, especially when Marvel's doing good TV. So, Chad, we will get to Batman's sexual proclivities later, but for now, we're going to talk about Loki. We're going to talk about Loki, Chad. I have officially broken Chad.
I mean, I've been seeing that all day, and it's been amusing to me. I did not expect it to come here, but all right. I'm together now.
I mean, it is something we all have to speak on because it is the cultural touchstone of our moment.
Oh, this is a thing, and I love it.
It is very much a thing, and so is Loki. Loki, also a thing. And Marvel put out good TV again and caused people to have an existential crisis as they watched a grown man watch his own demise. So, Chad, what did you think of Loki and the time element and all of the things?
Okay, so I enjoyed Loki. Marvel is doing this thing where they do very different things for all of their shows. And Loki is, so it's like The Good Place meets, and I can make this reference as I just watched this movie like 2 weeks ago, Defend Your Life. It's like, it's all of that. Because it's, very, like you said, very much an existential crisis. And this first episode is all about breaking Loki down and him coming to terms with where he's at and all these other things. And in the process, introduced this whole new time element that is supposedly hella powerful. And once you're dealing with time, you know, that's when I'm starting to like, that means we got rules that are probably gonna be broken and it's gonna drive me up a wall. But they've established some rules. They have not broken said rules yet. I'm cool. All in all, I'm down with the show, and I'm ready to see the second episode because from what I keep hearing, the second episode is like where it's at. It's the one to see.
Indeed, I have heard similar things from all of our friends out in the TV media sphere or the media sphere. Yeah, I really enjoyed Hiddleston's performance. There are things that stand out for me as highlights that we'll get to. But overall, it's just really interesting to me that we're in this place where, like, I was proven right. They hired a time bandit to track a time bandit. And I think that that's a very interesting way to go because I have a theory that involves a certain individual that we'll get to later. But I think that this could be the doorway to something very special in the MCU. So I'm looking forward to it. Kind of disappointed there weren't more like fantastical creatures, like, you know, that kind of like, I felt like the area where you're waiting to go in, you could have had some various different dimensional beings in there just to kind of liven it up to change the kind of the dynamics of the show. But all in all, Owen Wilson, just as good as everybody said he was. So it should be fun.
Yeah. So with the fantastical creatures part, like they made a point to say that there's no magic here, which, you know, if you really want to be technical and keep track of what Marvel's been saying, you know, in the first Thor, Thor describes his magic as science. So making it not magic, but they explicitly say here, your magic don't work here, bub. So I think that's
and neither do Infinity Stones.
Well, big magic gym. So yeah, magic, nothing.
No paperweights.
So I think that's why, like, if you wanted like creatures and whatnot, those will fall under like magic things and not whatever sort of science this is. So, and I think that was like the timekeepers are so powerful and so outworldly, but they wrap all of their stuff in this, the most mundane bureaucratic system that we know of. And I think that's part of the point is like, yeah, it's they're really out there with the powers, but we're just going to wrap it in this red tape machine that all of you are familiar with to like make it seem very, very mundane.
And also just to hammer home the point of the coldness, because when you're dealing with time and being in control and chipping branches and all of the things, you kind of have to have a coldness to your decision making, because you can't have compassion, you can't have understanding, you can't have empathy, because that could lead to more branches that create all of the things. So it kind of the ease of which we are taking the sticks from Thor Ragnarok and incinerating people should just tell you, hey, by the way, we don't care. You didn't have your ticket, one-way ticket, goodbye.
When they're like murdering entire timelines, so one person ain't nothing off their back.
Right, but like that's the whole thing. You, in order to do what they do, you have to have that cold, calculating bureaucraticness, where there everything is black and white, there is no gray, and this is the way that it's going to be. And all for the greater good of keeping the timeline in order. So I think that the bureaucratic process really setting of basically like a governmental department and the way that should run is a good setting for this.
Yeah, I agree. It's something different. I mean, everything about this is something different. The only thing that's familiar is actually Loki.
Yeah. Who's playing Special Agent Loki by the end of this episode. And that's what I think the show is basically going to be, and whatever subsequent seasons come after this, it'll be Loki on a mission. And, that's not a bad way to go.
Yeah, I don't know. We got to wait to see how this ends.
You can't put him back in his original timeline, Chad. That creates too many problems, and now he has the information that his demise comes in a certain way. And when you're armed with that particular knowledge and you're put right back in your same place in 2012 where you were taken out of, and you live out 2012 to 2019 with the knowledge of what already happens, then you're in Biff Tannen territory. And we all know how that ends.
Well,
with a couple of hot women.
Yeah, perms. That branch that I'm not going to get back into my Back to the Future thing. But my understanding of it is, like, when you become a variant, there's no way to put you back. So the only thing they do with you is get rid of you, is to, for lack of a better term, to murder you, to make sure you don't exist anymore. So, there's no putting him back. It's either stay there or be turned to that to ash. Everything about the TVA except for Owen Wilson would lead me to believe that he's going to turn to ash. But I mean, is Marvel really going to get rid of Loki, or are they going to do some new things with Loki, as you know, hinted at by the end of the episode, that we know that it seems the bad guy in this is another version of Loki. I think it's for a very good reason that they did not show us what Loki looks like, because I don't think it is Tom Hiddleston. I think it is another form of Loki that we will see. So maybe
you're hinting at the gender fluid nature of the character that has been hinted at in subsequent materials.
I mean, there are whispers of something like that happening, but let's not forget, Loki has taken many, many forms in the comics. He's been Kid Loki. He's been Frog Loki. He's been Lady Loki. So we don't know what Loki we're going to get. but we're going to get a different Loki. And, you know, if Hiddleston wants to, like, wrap this up with one big shebang, maybe he gets turned to ash and we go forward with new Loki or whatever. But I don't know. I don't know where they're going to go from here. I really have no idea. But they teed up. There's a lot of little things that hint at other stuff through this whole thing.
Easter eggs abound. So, Chad, let's talk about our good, our bad, and our not so good from episode one of Loki. All a glorious purpose. What would be your not so good for this particular episode?
I mean, my not so good. I kind of don't like. I know we had to go back to, you know, Endgame because that's where
general populace. Yeah.
Yeah, but you know when they add in the new shots and all that stuff, you can tell what's the new shots because it's only Hiddleston, and you can tell which shots they didn't want to use from Endgame because I don't know if they showed Hemsworth on the first floor. They went out of their way to not show Robert Redford and that crew on that stuff. So it's just those little nitpicky things that I know. Because I know how this goes, that they can't do it with everybody, or they don't want to do it with everybody, because they could pick and choose. They showed Rene Russo as Frigga all day long in this one, but those little things kind of scraped at me. But I mean, those are really like my only really gripes, because I mean, this particular episode is carried pretty much the interplay between Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson, and can't really complain about that.
This is true. My not so good would be the fact that we've killed Rene Russo in the MCU, because her story and the way that her death has been contextualized multiple times over the course of events since the Dark World has really changed things. It's given a new dimension in Endgame with her running into Fat Thor and sending him on his way and his journey. And again, here, sending Loki on his journey in a way. And it's just amazing that her minor character, who was not treated well in either Thor movie, continues to contribute to the MCU in meaningful ways. And I'm disappointed that she has actually met her demise, because I'd like more of that dynamic with her and her sons going forward, but unfortunately she has met her demise.
Yeah and well, no, Endgame did use new footage, but I mean, it's pretty much she's in the whole MCU probably like 30 minutes. And it's only after she's died that she keeps making bigger and bigger impacts going forward.
And she's the only person I can really think of who does that, aside from maybe John Slattery's Howard Stark. Because Howard shows up a couple of different times, both with dying at the hands of Bucky, and then also the memory recreation scene at the beginning of Civil War, so that make resonant impacts on Tony. So, you know, he's the only other person I can think of who would connect in that way.
Just a brief glance over everything. Yeah, I think you're right. Those are the two like post-mortem performances or impacts that we've had so much.
Let's not forget that Slattery is in Endgame.
Yep. Saying he gets the same situation as Frigga with Thor. Tony gets to meet him. It's just that he doesn't know it's Tony. But yeah, this, we get the same kind of thing with both of them.
Indeed. So, Chad, what is your good for this particular episode?
It's so much good, but the whole exchange between Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson. I mean, that's kind of that's the anchor of this episode, and those two do a good job. And in that whole thing, I mean, Owen Wilson's character tells you what he wants. He wants to understand why Loki does the things that he does. And it's just the process of getting Loki to the point where he can admit the things not only to Owen Wilson's character, Mobius, but to himself. And they have, you know, that's like 30 minutes of the episode of them just talking and looking at and examining everything Loki's done so far and trying to get Loki to say why you're doing these things and do you enjoy these things. And all for it to come out that, you know, Loki is basically insecure, and he puts on this front of his quest for power and all of that is a projection because he feels weak and insecure and unworthy of being around basically his brother and his father. So for those two to convey all that through their scenes together, I think that's the best part of the show. That is closely followed by all of just the weirdness of the rest of the TVA that we get.
Indeed. The TVA setting is really fun and interesting, and I enjoy the fact that somebody just keeps a drawer full of Infinity Stones just lying around as paperweights. That's makes me happy, considering all the trouble the Avengers had to go through to collect them all and use them again. Yeah, the Hiddleston and Owen Wilson dynamic is what rises or falls the show, or this particular episode, and it works really well, and people forget how good of an actor Owen Wilson is. Those of us who've seen him work in Wes Anderson films know that he still has that comedic timing and those beats that he's always had. I've been surprised at the amount of chatter that has come across in this press tour about A Wedding Crashers 2. Which is something that, you know, I never thought I really needed and still don't.
I don't think I need it.
I don't think anybody needs a comedy sequel 20 years later. I think we should have learned our lesson by now that after about 5 years, your period of, you know, that thing being funny has kind of run its course. Mm-hmm. But that's all good. Awesome. My good is actually the judge. I really enjoyed that little exchange between her and Loki, and it just is really lively, and I enjoy it. And she's bound and determined to kill him, which is fun. The other thing that I really like and is my good is Hiddleston's facial performance during the watching your own demise sequence. That is a masterclass in facial acting, because he, as one person on the internet wrote this week, Hiddleston went through all the stages of grief within 15 seconds. And that is entirely complex and difficult to pull off. And the fact that he does it and nails it so well just shows you how powerful and how good of an actor he is. And, you know, again, puts this Loki right back in the same position the other Loki is in, of basically, you know, knowing that this is, you know, the path that I'm going down. And, you know, it's going to be interesting to me to see how they follow that up. But yeah, that would be my good is those two things. That in the production design, I love the floating heads behind the judge. I love the fact that they have literally like implanted the faces of the timekeepers everywhere. I just think that it's awesome. I've heard a lot of people comparing the digital landscape that they used out the window to Brazil. I would actually contrast it with the first Blade Runner, or more aptly, all of the digital backgrounds George used in the Star Wars trilogy, mainly everything to do with Coruscant, because it has a very Coruscant feel to it.
Yeah, I can see that. I know you're about to go to bad, which is going to, which I have a tentative bad, and it's actually part of your good. The judge is Gugu Mthume-Raw, and she is an excellent actor, and I love her in the things that I've seen her in, and I think she needs to have a substantial part in whatever she's in. So with that being said, we've only seen her in this episode. She's only in it for like 2 minutes. She does make an impact as a judge, but if that's all she is in this, I'm going to be highly upset. Very, 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 very upset. So I'm going to assume that since it is a named actor that has skins on the wall and people will know and like from seeing her, that the judge, there's more to the judge than just what we saw to in this episode. If that's not the case, Marvel, what you doing? You could have got somebody else to do this like hit and quit kind of role. But it's a tentative bad. It has the potential to be good, has the potential to be very bad. We have to see how this plays out.
Indeed. My bad. And this is going to be difficult for me to say. My bad is dropping the, it's a version of you at the end of the show. For the only, for the specific purpose that I don't believe that it's Loki or even a Loki variant. I think it is the terminology there. If you look at the script and the way that it's written, it implies to me more that it is a Loki-like person, someone who has a similar psyche and background to Loki. Because the things that we learned in this episode pretty much point to whoever this is simply killing off TVA agents, which means they have to know the TVA exists. They are collecting time resets, which again, they have to know that the TVA exists to collect the time resets. And it is a logical, more probable than not conclusion that the person is collecting the time resets in order to harvest the things that are inside to create a very large reset, which could potentially reset the entire unified timeline, a time bomb, if you will. And so with all those things being said, I don't think it is a Loki or a Loki variant who would be interesting in resetting time. You know who I think would be interested in resetting time?
Go ahead.
You know, Chad, the bill always comes due. The bill always comes due. And we've always expected it to come in Doctor Strange too. I even suggested Marvel put it on posters. But what if it's actually Baron Mordo who is underneath that hood, who is very upset and frustrated at time being messed with and manipulated by gods and would like it to be reset so that they no longer have power?
So that's not where I thought you were going with this. Okay, so the biggest thing for me with that is when we first meet Owen Wilson, he's in the church in like the 1500s, and he's talking to the kid, and the kid, like he asks the kid who did this, and the kid points to the stained glass mirror, a window, and it's a picture of the devil. So first thing I think is, are they really gonna go for this Mephisto thing again? So soon, is this what we're really gonna do? And then he drops the whole it's a version of you thing, and I can see why the kid would say that particular picture, because that devil had the horns and it kind of is reminiscent of Loki's horn. So I got that. So that would be my biggest knock against it being Mordo, and because I mean, unless he's changing his appearance. And there's no reason for him to. Why would the kid point out that thing? Unless in his quest to do these things, he has teamed with a devil-like creature, and we're back to the Mephisto thing right again. I'm not saying any of these things are happening, but that's the only logical way I can get that, just from that one thing with the kid. Because it has to be...
no, right. But the kid also could basically just be reacting to devil, as in he saw magic being done. This is the 1500s, and magic is equated with evil at that particular point. And so only devils would do magic, essentially. So you could also use that as a reason why you would point to that particular stained glass window. The other thing that kind of points to me, that points away from it, if you want to make that argument, is the gum. I don't think anybody's made a real good determination on the gum and what significance it has or where it comes from. But the gum seems to be kind of a giveaway that it's somebody from a more modern time.
Yeah. I think, well, to me, the gum will point more to Loki being the mischievous scamp that he/she or whatever is. If they did see the kid there when they were pulling off this little caper or whatever, just give them some gum. Why not? I mean, you're not, they have no interest in killing the kid, and it's kind of funny for the kid to have gum that has no bearing in the time period that that the kid's in. It's just, you know, something that probably would amuse them. That's why I would lean more towards it being a version of Loki.
But again, this dude did write Doctor Strange 2.
Yes, he did. I think there are going to be a lot of, I think there's a reason for that. I think there are a lot of ties between that. I don't know if Mordo is because of the link of the writer, is not completely out of the realm. I don't think Mordo is the one for this one, but you know, the writer would have an easier link for it. But I do think there's a lot of things that in here that are going to have ramifications on Doctor Strange and possibly other movies. I can't take credit for this. After watching the show, I've heard people talk about it, and then I watched it again. I'm like, oh, okay, I might see that. But a lot of people seem to think that the Time Authority might have ties to Kang the Conqueror, who we have not seen yet, but we know is in Ant-Man and the Wasp sequel, Quantumania. If you look at the cartoon that they have of the Time Authorities, the one in the middle, he's kind of got the color thing going on that Kang does in the comics. And if I want to make the case that he looks like Jonathan Winters, he kind of does. And you can see it, and it's the same thing with the head on the sculpture. So there's that. And Kang's whole thing is time. He's obsessed with time and things going the way they should be going, which sounds a lot like what the Time Authority wants. There's a couple other things that I can't remember. Those were the big ones, though. But it could be hints at Kang, which would really be curious, because Kang, we know, is going to be an Ant-Man, not Doctor Strange. So how does that lead to Doctor Strange, which leads to Ant-Man? But, you know, it's just something to think about.
Indeed. And I think that ultimately what we're doing here, people have been, you know, we've got, you know, Black Widow coming out in 3 weeks, basically. And people have been speculating about what Phase 4 looks like and feels like. There's been a lot of, you know, conjecture and frustration that Black Widow was going to go first because it really is a background movie, not a going forward movie. I think that what they did in the kind of what I call the Jurassic Park sequence of the little time animated clock, very similar to Mr. DNA, who lays out the particulars of how you get the dinosaurs in Jurassic Park. Same kind of thing with how time and what the TVA is here. For me, it was just kind of like, forgot my train of thought. What was I saying?
I don't know. It was you veered off with the Jurassic Park thing, which was spot on.
Yeah, that's what got me off track there. it's been a long week, folks. But it's very interesting to me that I know what it was. It appears to me with a line that was in the animated short about there was a multiversial war. Mm-hmm. I believe that's where we're heading in phase four and in phase five, is a multiversal war for control of what is the universal unified timeline. And I think that's where we're going. I mean, we've got a film, entire film called Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. We've got Quantumania. We've got, Spider-Man No Way Home, which, you know, is heavily rumored to feature multiple X-Men, multiple Spider-Men and multiple Spider-Man villains. Doctor Strange is going to be into No Way Home. So, I mean, everything is starting to add up that we're getting multiverses, truly getting multiverses. And as they laid out in the timeline, very clearly, there was a multiversal war that led to the TVA and led to the time gods delineating and controlling this one timeline. Then they consolidated everything after winning the last one. So it's possible what we're heading with this one is another multiversal war to split things off and then seeing who can win to bring them back together.
That is, I mean, you're probably right. That is a way to go. My personal proclivities, I kind of don't want that because that may, it, when you, once you like officially open up to multiverses, which I know we're doing, but when you open it up to like a multiversal war, that means you're going to have all these different version of characters in some point doing all these things. And
which allows you to have Hugh Jackman in the MCU. It also allows you to have Chris Evans as both Captain America and Human Torch.
Yeah, that could happen. It also allows for just confusion and utter chaos.
Craziness, yes.
So,
but I trust Marvel to do it in a way that makes sense and is easily explainable to your grandmother.
I trust that they will try. I trust they will try, but multiverses are always tricky. So I don't know how much.
Well, my thing personally is that to me, this is them trying not to repeat themselves. I think that they didn't want to go down another rabbit hole where they chose some grand arc, let's say Secret Invasion, and just made that the centerpiece of the two phases. And because it would feel and look very similar to the pathway that got you to Infinity War and Endgame. And I think they didn't want to do that. And of course, you'd already done Civil War. You've done several of the big arcs that Marvel is known for already. So I think doing something that is not a direct link to the comic books, as in there is not a direct, we are following this Infinity Saga. That's the storyline we're following. Like, changing it up to where it's just a generalized, you know, my belief has been for a while that in No Way Home is going to open up a lot of this stuff, because if you remember correctly, Amy Pascal made the decision to help Marvel make the decision to reveal Peter Parker's identity at the end of Far From Home. You have to reconcile that. And one of the ways it is reconciled in the comic books is Spidey going to Doctor Strange and having people forget things. What if Doctor Strange, trying to help Spidey help people forget things, goes a little bit awry and opens up multiverses? And then, you know, you've got Scarlet, you've got Wanda over here, and they need some help. And now you've got the full Multiverse of Madness by accident. You know, that's not a bad way to go. But I think that's a better way. If you're going to go multiversal, it's a better way to do it than just helter-skelter kind of half-heartedly the way they've been doing.
Yeah, I didn't even think about the whole angle with Doctor Strange. I know that's... So Well, in the comic, I don't remember if he went to Doctor Strange first, but he eventually goes to Mephisto, and that's how that I did anything happens. But yeah, that could be a way to do it. I mean, I have no choice. I guess I'm fine with them trying. It's just I always see the pitfalls in it, but you know, Marvel has done what they do, and they've done it well. So they're I can't really argue with it that much.
But and I think it's kind of spun on by the Fox acquisition as well, because it provides you an easier pathway to explaining away mutants and aliens and the Fantastic Four and everything else.
Yeah. But I am glad that you brought up the whole Amy Pascal helping them decide to reveal Peter's identity, because I knew that I read that like several places, and I knew we had talked about it, but for the life of me, I cannot find anything that said that in print. And I know I've seen it.
No, it's not in print. It was on an Empire podcast.
Okay.
Empire did a podcast that was a joint. I don't remember if it was a joint podcast with Feige and Pascal, or if it was just a Pascal podcast where she said, we had the conversation with Marvel and I came up with this idea. And I think Feige has backed it up that it was also Pascal's idea. But if in case any of our listeners are wondering, the entire collection of Empire spoiler cast are on under behind a paywall now, but it's a $5 paywall, and it is well worth your $5 a month to have access to all of those wonderful spoiler casts, which include all of the recent Mandalorian season 1 and 2, as well as WandaVision, Falcon and Winter Soldier, and Loki, full spoiler cast. So if you want to go surf over to Empire and check them out, they're doing awesome work, but that's where that comes from.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to have to go check this paywall thing out. I forget why I was even invested in it, but I spent like 2 days trying to find that, and I could not because find it anywhere.
Because it's them comping to the fact that this was our ideas, not theirs.
Yeah.
And it's them saying, we led them to this. We wanted to do something bold and different.
Yeah. And it's been ever since I found that out, I've been on the whole, you know, maybe all the things that people hate about MCU Spider-Man isn't really Marvel, but Sony, and then Marvel massages it to make it better. And I mean, I might be crapping too much on Sony. It might really be like a 50-50 venture, but not all of the things that people hate is strictly Marvel. At worst, it's all Sony. At best, it's probably like a merger of ideas from both places.
I mean, honestly, I think the biggest complaint that people have about the Tom Holland version of Spider-Man is his tie, basically taking Uncle Ben out and putting Tony Stark in, and how closely tied he is to Stark and Stark Tech and all of the things, whereas that's more of an organic, natural Peter thing in the comic books and in previous iterations on film. And I think that you can debate on whose vantage point that would come from as to whether that be a good idea or not. I don't think it's a horrible idea to tie your golden goose to their golden goose, because that helps both of you. And it's just a natural inclination. And also, we've seen freaking Uncle Ben die 5 times. I don't, like, it's a different way to skin the same cat, so to speak.
Yeah. Like, somewhere in that same span of that interview, in one of those press tours, I'm pretty sure I'm remembering this right, Pascal talked about how they wanted to do something, they had to do something different. It might be in the same interview, but every incarnate, like, because they've had 3 different incarnations of Spider-Man, I mean, at this point, it's almost 20 years, but when this 3rd reboot started, it was less than 2 years after the previous one, and the previous one started 5 years after the other one. So they've had all these incarnations of Spider-Man, of Peter Parker Spider-Man, relatively close to each other, and every time they've done it, they've tried to do something a little different to distinguish it. And because they've had two incarnations before, the easiest way to distinguish this one from the other one, and you're teaming with Marvel, is to closely tie him to all those Marvel characters. So I understand exactly why they did what they did. I wish other people were not as hard on that, but I understand being disappointed that it's not the Spider-Man.
That he's not, that he's not the organic, that he's not the organic, happy, bubbly science bro, that he's more the awestruck kid who's just wanting to be like his heroes. You know, I can totally understand that. Yeah. But anyway, let's get back to Loki. What are we looking forward to and expecting from episode two?
So I have no expectations for this thing other than because since I've heard that it's the buildup for it and it makes it sound so good, I've kind of dropped all my expectations. I expect nothing. I just want to see what they're going to do. I think if we get a reveal that it's that it is an actual Loki and it's another version of Loki, I think we'll get to see who or what it is next episode. But I want to see why everybody thinks that the second episode is the strongest thing of the show so far. And it's the one. If you weren't sold on it before, you'll be sold on it after you see that one.
Well, and my thing is also like, people are comparing this to the first two episodes of WandaVision, which are very rooted in that sitcom idea. And then slowly but surely, by the time episodes 8 and 9 roll around WandaVision, that sitcom aesthetic has just completely gone away. And I think people are apprehensive after that experience to trust that Marvel's actually going to do the weird and different thing all the way through, because let's face it, what we got last Wednesday was very weird and very different for Marvel. And they're, I think, wisely afraid of this breaking down and becoming just another CGI boom boom slugfest. And you know, I can understand that, but I think it'll be just like WandaVision. At the end of it, there'll be a mix of classic Marvel and new Marvel, and you know, that I can live with. I'm also looking forward to the reveal, if they do reveal who the actual villain is of the piece, because again, you're only dealing with a 6-episode run and you're, you know, 1/6 of the way through. So
yeah, so we'll be done at the end
we'll
of
July. We'll be 2 hours in to a 6-hour show.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't realize it was an hour until I actually clicked on it the first time.
Yeah, Feige's been very open that all their shows are six hours. Whether that's how that time is broken up is different. For example, WandaVision's 9 episodes versus Falcon and Winter Soldier, which is 7, 6 or 7, and then Loki is 6, but that may not be the same for. That may not be the same for Hawkeye or for Miss Marvel. Like, one might be 8 episodes, the next may be 6 episodes. Like, Feige is just, the only thing Feige said is our hard and fast rule is these are going to be 6 hours of Marvel entertainment each. Whether that's six 1-hour episodes or that's X number of 30-minute episodes, by the end of it, because if you remember, we were doing the whole episode count thing for WandaVision. Like, some of those episodes are 35 minutes, others are 45 to 42 minutes, others are 50 minutes. Like, it's a varying range. Whereas every episode of Falcon and Winter Soldier is pretty much 50 minutes, 45 minutes to 50 minutes. Same way so far with Loki. So, you know, if you're going by Feige's hard and fast rule of 6-hour entertainment, we're just going to have 6-hour long episodes, which is fine by me.
Yep, I'm good with that.
Indeed. So Chad, our good friend Jim Bavida of IGN.com, hosted a Ghostbusters panel about a week or so ago. And you know that Ghostbusters Day is near and dear to my heart, as I have now been been recruited to be a stand for the female Ghostbusters movie that I crapped on for 2 years. So what were your thoughts on what information Jim got out of that panel? Because I was basically like, okay. So Ivan came up with an idea and just wanted to do his daddy's film. I get it. Okay. Cool beans.
So here's the part where I admit that I sent you the link. I know you like Ghostbusters. And then I forgot all about it because I don't care. I was curious because I was curious because Jim was doing it. But in general, you know, Ghostbusters does not do anything for me.
Except when people have the Bobby Brown song running through their head randomly at 3 in the morning.
Hey, we can get down with the songs. Most of the songs are right. That one in particular, that was close to my heart, but don't care about the movie at all.
So like, this is just being billed as a family affair, and they're marketing this hard as a Ghostbusters 3, a true Ghostbusters 3 that will carry the legacy on to a new generation of kids in proton packs. It'll become adults in proton packs. I mean, Reitman very much was on the, you know, right. It's his dad. His dad did the first one. He was on set for all of that stuff. Like, it's a very deeply personal thing for him, and I understand why. And hearing him and hearing the stars talk about it, they're coming at this marketing wise from a far more personal place than they ever came with the female Ghostbusters. I don't know if you remember correctly, but we did not get a trailer for the female Ghostbusters until the April before the June release. Let me say that again. The April before the movie came out in June.
Yep.
That is the definition of, we believe this is a flaming pile of dog poop, so we're going to leave it on your doorstep. Like, you know, you just don't. So to see them approaching this in a much more nostalgic driven, you know, place of revenance type, you know, viewpoint is just very different and very odd considering how they marketed the last one, but feels apropos to what they're trying to do, what the whole movie is trying to do, really.
Yeah, I mean, all I've seen from the movie so far are the little marshmallow men, which, you know, that reeks of hitting the kid audience because they're all going to think it's cute. Which, you know, it works. If it works in the story, it's fine with me. But that's literally all I've seen. I've seen that scene with Paul.
That's the third one. That's the third version of the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man that we've gotten in this franchise. The last one got hit in the balls with lasers. So, I mean,
if they had to be consistent about one thing, that like he.
Well, that's the iconic thing. It's literally in the damn logo. So it's literally in the damn logo. So I get why they're consistent with it, but it's just like, I don't know. There's now always going to be a part of me, and Feig doesn't really address it very much. Even in the wide-ranging Collider interview that he did a couple of months ago, he doesn't really talk about it very much, except in the fact that he'll still support and retweet people who come at him talking about how wonderful the film is and how it has inspired their daughters to get more involved in science classes and things like that. But I've never really heard him speak at length about the whole process and what happened. But for me, there's always going to be this big what if now, because it was very clear. Take what we know from the Sony hack out of it. If you just take the film on its own measure, they were very clearly setting up Gozer and the original threat for the sequel. And there's a part of me that will always want to see, you know, Leslie Mann and Kate McKinnon and Melissa McCartney and Kristen Wiig do that thing and have the inverse of Gozer being a dude this time instead of a scantily clad woman. And, you know, there's always going to be a part of me that wishes that we had gotten that because they deserve that opportunity. But, you know, here we are, and where we go from here, we'll see. It all depends on box office receipts, but that'll determine whether there's an afterlife, Chad.
I see what you did there.
And of course, we're also interested to see if they have Slimer in this one, as they had female Slimer last time, and that didn't seem to go over too well with the fellas.
They had two of them. So
yep, they have male and female, and I believe some little Slimers in the taxi cab in that movie. So
yeah, I don't remember. I barely remember anything about that. But yeah, I can't imagine that they don't have Slimer.
Again, gotta hit the mainstays of the nostalgia.
Yeah, it's you know, Slimer and Stay Puft Marshmallow Man have been through every incarnation of Ghostbusters, the movies,
including the animated series,
animated show. Yes, so they have to put them in there. I would be shocked if she didn't. And you know, if you're gonna make, I mean, going with Ghostbusters is a nostalgia play anyway, so go all the way.
So, Chad, let's switch gears and talk about something that is near and dear to your heart. That would be animation. Warner Brothers announced this week that Tom and Jerry is getting a sequel animated series that is going directly to HBO Max. Your thoughts, sir, having seen the movie, on this incarnation of Tom and Jerry going the animated series route for a sequel?
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I actually didn't hear that. So I'm fine with that. They actually, when the movie was released, they actually had, I think, two new animated shorts for Tom and Jerry released around the same time on HBO Max. They were done by the same crew that did the new Looney Tunes cartoons, and those completely captured the spirit of those old Tom and Jerry cartoons. The Tom and Jerry movie itself, you know, it wasn't good. But Tom and Jerry in that movie, and the Tom and Jerry characters that we know from the cartoons, Tom and Jerry themselves, Spike, you know, even the cameo by Droopy, they're all consistent with what we think of with Tom and Jerry. So if you're going to make if they're making this new series, like a sequel series on HBO Max, but continuing from what we got from Tom and Jerry, I'm fine with it. I think it'll hold up to what we know of Tom and Jerry, probably better than the actual movie did. So I think this is a good move. I'm all for more new animation with these characters. Now, I wish we can get it out to kids in a way where they kind of grow up with it instead of on these streaming services locked away. But that's a whole nother discussion.
And what are your thoughts on Mindy Kipling's Velma series that people are surprised there's no Scooby-Doo in?
Like I said, when I saw people were, when I saw that tweet come around, I was like, if Scooby-Doo's in the show, it's a Scooby-Doo show, not a Velma show. I'm cool with Velma. She's, you know, of the Mystery Inc. people, she's probably second or third. If you don't count Scooby-Doo, she's probably second or third after Shaggy. Yeah, she's after Shaggy. She's before Fred. So, and lots of people really like Velma. Lots of, you know, as over the last 20 years, as nerd became not a bad thing, and people embraced it. People have really embraced Velma. And, you know, LGBTQ plus people have really embraced Velma, as a lot of people seeing themselves in her. So, I'm all for this. I don't really know how you do it, because, I mean, you just got to do your own kind of thing. But from the cartoons, Mystery Inc. has pretty much been together since like kindergarten all the way till now. So it's kind of hard to see, unless she goes off to college somewhere and they're doing like colleges, Velma. But other than that, you're just going to be doing your own thing and ignoring everything about Scooby-Doo, which shouldn't be too hard.
It should not. So Chad, let's also talk about the fact that you need to remind me of exactly how old Harrison Ford is at this moment in time. This date, June the 14th, 2021. How old is our good friend Harrison Ford? So we played this game all the time, but there's a reason I am asking.
I know I'm going to say he's 78, but I'm about to look it up right now.
Because, see, I believe that he should be right at 80.
And I'm right. He at right this second, he is 78. In a little less than a month, basically 29 days from now, he'll be 79.
You know what that 79-year-old man is doing right now?
He has his fedora and whip on.
Yes, he does. He is on a set filming a fifth Indiana Jones movie, not directed by Steven Spielberg and not scripted by George Lucas. Your thoughts, sir, on the fact that, as you say, you need proof, there is Harrison Ford on set in a mask filming Indiana Jones 5, directed by James Mangold, coming off of his Oscar-nominated turn for Ford versus Ferrari.
So I have, I really have conflicting feelings about James Mangold, but I'll come to him second. So yes, there is proof. I've seen several photos. The first one I saw was with Harrison Ford in a mask, somebody else, and standing next to him is Kathleen Kennedy on the set of the new Indiana Jones movie. Which, as a quick side, I did watch Raiders yesterday since it turned 40 over the weekend. And I didn't realize that that was Kathleen Kennedy's first like movie credit. So this is like a full circle kind of thing. But
yeah, I mean, she spent 30 years with Amblin. She was there for all of Spielberg's big hits for the 80s and 90s. Like, this is not like some jabroni, you know, jabroni woman who slept her way to the top. Like, this is a woman who has, between her and Frank Marshall, they have pretty much every major film credit you can think of between 1980 and 2010. So, like, it's not like she didn't come by the job, honestly. She knows her way around the film set, and she knows how to wrangle financing. She may not have come up in the same system that Feige has in terms of, like, being open to, like, you know, everything being producer driven. She came up in a more of a director driven era, but still, man, like, she's got the resume. She is the Trent Johnson of Hollywood.
Yeah. As far as I see it, like, her, the only knock I have on her is that they went into this new trilogy without a plan. But other than that, you can't.
At least they're admitting now they went into this trilogy without a plan. At least JJ is openly saying, yeah, we didn't plan. Probably should.
Yeah. But, I mean, I'll admire the withered some of the goodwill away. Star Wars is still overwhelmingly popular. I can tell you, I went to Disney World. I was in Galaxy's Edge. There was a line to get in every goddamn thing. Everything. The most popular ride in Disney World and Disneyland now is Rise of the Resistance. You have to be on site at Disney, on the Disney World site at 7 a.m. Disney World and land, and get on the app and just to get in a queue to ride Rise of the Resistance. And that queue goes by like that. So, and the park doesn't open for like another 4 hours. All that to say, Star Wars is fine. Kathleen Kennedy is fine. Y'all need to get, all you people that don't like her need to get out your feelings. Back to Indiana Jones. I don't have much more to say than that old ass man is really doing this. We're really right back here. What can I say? I didn't think we'd get this far. Because, you know, he's old. I didn't know we'd make it, but we made it. He's here. He's doing it. Have no idea what the story is. Have no idea what
we survived a couple of plane crashes to get here.
Yeah. That's the thing. It's not just that Harrison Ford is old. Harrison Ford is old and he does stuff like that. He goes and gets in planes and thinks it's a good idea. So, yeah. Well, when this was announced, if you asked me to bet money if we were going to see it, I would have said no because I didn't think the old man would make it. But he's here. I'm glad he's here. And he's got the fedora on. We'll see what happens.
And there are Nazis in the pictures. So that's the interesting thing to me is the time period. Because last time we were dealing with commies, and this time we're back to dealing with Nazis. So it'll be interesting to me. and yeah, what which, the archaeology and what the archaeological artifact is this time, because that was part of the problem, was the crystal skull was not based on any existing anthropological culture-ish, you know, thing. Like the everybody knows the whole the legend of the Holy Grail. Everybody knows what the Ark of the Covenant is. And, you know, it's not that hard of a stretch to imagine Indian cultures that value certain statues and things as holy. So, like, that was a difference, again, also with that, with Crystal Skull, as compared to the other three.
Yeah, but, so we've got James Mangold directing this one, and he did Logan, and, you know, I don't like Logan. And he was very, I would say he was kind of pompous when it came to Logan, when people would say things about Logan, because he's active on Twitter. But someone on Twitter pretty much took a dump on this new Indiana Jones movie and said things, I wish I had it pulled up, but he said things that were blatantly not true, which James Mangold responded to. He's like, that is what you're saying is not true. And you're destroying the movie before you even know what we're doing, what the story is, what any of this is. So, yeah, you need to cut that crap out. He called him clickbaity stuff, and he said he will fight clickbaity stuff tooth and nail. So I expect James Mangold to be very busy, because Twitter is a place to go when you do that kind of stuff. But I agree with him in this instance. We don't know anything about the movie other than the stills we've seen. If we don't have to like it, he even said it, we don't have to like it. You can kill it once you see it, but just wait until you see what's going on. So I agree with that. I mean, I don't agree. I didn't think this movie should have been made, not this way, but we're here. And now we just have to see what they give us to really judge it.
Well, the thing that's fascinating to me is that Indy 5 was announced, I believe, in the same press release as episode 7, 8, and 9. That was October of 2012. We're here now in June of 2021, and we're finally getting around to it.
Wow. I didn't realize it was that long. I mean, you say that. I know it was that long. I just did not realize it was that long ago.
The Disney acquisition was announced in October of 2012, and here we are almost a decade later. We got our three Star Wars movies and two Star Wars stories and 1.5 Star Wars television series. And, you know, now we're finally getting around to Indiana Jones, the other Lucasfilm property. So.
Man, that's, wow, almost a whole decade. It'll be a whole decade by the time Indy comes out next year.
So, Chad, Batman. Bad at sex. Very, very selfish individual. Batman the Animated Series will never be looked at the same way again after today.
I'm not going to say it, but I will just say this. That is not what was presented. The producers of Harley Quinn wanted certain things done, and WB Satan said no. That doesn't mean that Batman does not participate in said things. It just means WB said you can't show him doing said things.
Real heroes do said things, Chad.
I agree.
This is an entire innuendo conversation that only 5 people listening to this will get. But this is fun. I enjoy this.
Look, we're recording this on June 14th. Just go on Twitter. Look for June 14th and type in Batman. Look for June 14th, and I guarantee you'll find out what we're talking about.
It was very interesting that it was the second leading trend on Twitter, that Batman, within the span of like 2 hours, became the second leading trend worldwide on Twitter. That was just amazing.
It still is. I'm looking at it right now. It still is.
I mean, I guess there's a reason that his mouth is left open. You know, just cover up the eyes and... just leave the mouth open for a specific purpose. And I guess Catwoman's leather suit has a few buttons missing.
Yeah. Yep. I'm not touching that nose.
Well, before we have a giant mallet hit upon our heads and Warner Brothers issues a cease and desist order, we're going to let you go. But we will be back with our podcast next week about Loki Episode 2. And before we go, Chad, do you know that you get to be put on the clock? On the clock for the Fast and the Furious and Too Fast, Too Furious. Yeah, you're halfway there. Just one more movie and then we get to talk. I'm already on episode 4.
Yeah, I know. I know. I almost watched the second one yesterday when I chose to. Yes, it was yesterday. I could choose between that or Raiders or Man of Steel. I chose Raiders and then I chose Man of Steel today. So I guess I'll lose tomorrow. But yeah. I know. I've watched the first
family, one. Chad. Family.
You know, I did not think he said that word in the first one, but he did. I am mildly curious how we get to 9 from 1 with the family dynamic after watching the first one. Because ain't nothing about that even makes me think that John Cena should be possible, but here we are. So I'm mildly interested. And there's a lot of other things that I'm mildly interested about. But you know, that first movie is not as bad as I remember it. It's still not good, but it is at least entertaining. And you can see why this has lasted so long, because I came out of it liking Paul Walker and Vin Diesel more. I think I would like Paul Walker the same amount through all of these. And I think I would start to like Vin Diesel less as these go on and the more times he says family. So
we'll see. That'll about do it for this week's podcast. Keep up with this podcast. If you follow me on Twitter, I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
At the Mets Theory.
Thank you very much. And so long, Paul Maneri, and thank you for your service.
Yes, sir.